Chapter 5. In contrast to the rest of the morning campus, Pickett's office was a whirlwind of chaotic energy, a mess of secretaries, administrative assistants, officers, and cadets, coming and going in a storm of papers, barked orders, buzzing cell phones, and arguments between those in the office and those hanging around outside it, all trying to help tame something of the scandal the barracks fire and Marshall's death had churned up. The only person who seemed calm in all of this was Colonel Pickett himself, seated behind a desk piled high and wildly with a mountain of documents, and smiling serenely as he talked into his phone, as if the building that had burned on his watch, the endless parade of journalists and inspectors coming and going, the higher-ups demanding answers, and the cadet who'd died under his auspices, were exactly the kind of problems and losses he dealt with every day. Plump and satisfied, always wearing a self-assured smile, Pickett possessed an unwavering kind of unctuous calm that suggested to Tony he was not somebody who lost much sleep worrying about the finer details of consequences. It must have suggested something much worse to Kaz, because he barely spared the man a look as Tony walked into the room, and Pickett turned from his phone call to regard Tony with his unchanging grin.
"Back so soon, Captain? Didn't you just leave?" he said, waving to Tony with a flippant gesture Tony couldn't help thinking was too glib, considering the circumstances of their reunion. "And you brought the sergeant with you, I see. Hello, sergeant," he said, throwing Kaz another wave that Kaz barely even bothered to return. "To what do I owe the pleasure? Don't tell me you finally solved that whole Afghanistan morass, eh?"
He winked at that, but it was not a gesture Tony felt he could return in good conscience. He could hardly even bring himself to joke. "If only. No, Colonel. I was just in town to pay my respects to Airman First Class DeRay after his untimely passing." Tony hung his head at this, the unfortunate reality of Marshall's far too early demise hitting him again. Pickett might have not planned to himself. Tony doubted the man had had time to really give it much thought, to let it sink in. He understood what it was like to be overwhelmed by duty at the expense of one's own emotional needs. But upon viewing his associate's gesture, he followed suit, hanging his own head.
"Oh, yes. I thought I saw you at the funeral. Untimely indeed, Airman DeRay was one of the best and brightest we had here, a fact that you and Sergeant Miller, no doubt, played such a major part in. We were all devastated by the unfortunate accident that led to his death. As the head of this base, and the man responsible for overseeing the very renovations that might have been responsible for his untimely passing, I must assure you both that I feel more responsible than anybody here, and we've been working night and day to discover not only what led to the malfunctioning sprinkler in his barracks, but as well to what we might do in the future to prevent yet another such untimely death. I have to tell you, Major, but some of the contractors we're reaching out to, and some of the engineers I want on this project, well, you should see the ideas they're proposing."
Tony nodded his head in reluctant acquiescence, annoyed to see how quickly Pickett rushed from discussion of Marshall's death to his own excitement over how he was going to fix the academy after his earlier decisions resulted in this tragedy. Again, Tony knew what it was like to find yourself avoiding grief through work, and what it was like to make up for your failings through trying to address them in the future. Nor did he want to think the worst of Pickett, whom he, at the very least, knew to be an effective, if uncharismatic, and often short-sighted to the point of callousness, leader. yet his own niggling doubts and Kaz's offhand mention of possibly dirty dealings stirred in him again. "Thank you, Colonel, but I was only here to stop by and offer my condolences. As you might know, I was quite close with Cadet DeRay and wanted to be certain I made it in time to attend his funeral, as well as offer my condolences to all those who knew him best, yourself included. As the head of our academy, I know you understand what it's like to bear the burden of the worst that happens here. I felt it wouldn't be proper to come and then go without stopping to pay my respects."
"Oh, well, that's..."
Pickett stopped as he looked up from his desk and out into the hallway at something that, if only for a moment, wiped the smile off of Pickett's face and replaced it with an expression not unlike the one Tony had observed on his face during the funeral. Almost instinctually, Tony turned his head to follow Pickett's gaze, and found himself staring at a tower of a man standing in the doorway, glaring so intently at Pickett that Tony wondered if he'd even registered on the man's radar. He must have been 6'3" and weighed 250 pounds of pure muscle. The way he carried himself, how alert, how tensed, how completely aware he seemed, suggested that he knew how to use every ounce of that power, too, a skill he had most likely learned not just from extensive military training, but from bona fide experience. Tony had spent his life around military men, after all, had seen dozens of combat veterans, and become well acquainted with their comportment, but only a handful of times in his life had he seen soldiers who radiated such obvious combat prowess and the demeanor to guarantee they used it with lethal efficiency. He almost felt a shock of pity for the men who ended up on the wrong side of him in the middle of a combat operation. Hell, standing here and now, he almost pitied Pickett, who regarded the man with exactly the kind of dismay Tony imagined his theoretical enemies might.
"One second, gentlemen,"
Pickett muttered offhandedly to Tony and Kaz, as he excused himself from his desk and hurried out of the room at such a pace even Kaz seemed to find it strange.
"Jesus, what's got that guy spooked? I mean, yeah, I'd hate to end up on Orlando Mars' bad side, too, but it's not like he's going to torture the guy. Not that I blame him if he did."
"You know him?" Tony asked. His curiosity piqued.
"Not personally, no," Kaz said, shaking his head. "But Orlando's a small legend among infantrymen, drill sergeants, anybody who's made a career out of killing in the last decade. Not that you'd hear about him in any books or in the news. This isn't some Chris Kyle American sniper shit that the boys upstairs love to trot out to impress the media and voters come election year. No, Orlando's a wet work specialist, the kind of person they want no eyes on because he practically doesn't exist in an official capacity anymore. He's too valuable to leave even remotely vulnerable. There's no official record of the real extent of his success, but word among those of us in the knows that he's got over 200 confirmed kills, 6 tours of duty, only 2 on the books, and that he'd be wearing a coat so full of medals, even he'd buckle under its weight if they actually gave them to him. He's less a soldier than a missile. The brass can aim at any single target they please, go to bed, and wake up to find the mission accomplished. The assassination of Ali al-Sanchez, the disappearance of Nawaf Jarrah, the rescue of that State Department official who'd been ransomed by ISIL. You won't ever hear the official record, but those weren't squad missions. They were all down to one man."
"Jesus Christ," Tony muttered. "What's a guy like that doing here, then?"
"I wish I had a clue. Orlando's not associated with Northern Command, at least not that I'm aware of. I mean, not unless we're suddenly in the business of assassinating people over there. Is that what they've got you doing over in Afghanistan, Tony? You trading in your pencils and your rulers for a pistol and a knife?"
Tony laughed at that, then remembered that he'd forgotten to bring any writing utensils of his own back to America with him.
Not just yet. But I tell you, if I had a gun right now, I'd gladly make the inverse trade. You don't think Pickett will mind if I grab one of his, do you? It wasn't that he planned to do much work while he was here. He was officially on leave, and had left his laptop behind to ensure he didn't get distracted during these days reserved for morning. But the nature of his problem-solving meant that he might be struck by ideas and inspiration at the most inopportune of times. Having a pen handy ensured at least that he could jot those down and reference them later. Kaz shrugged and gestured with his left hand to the mess of Pickett's desk.
You think he's going to notice a single pen missing from all of that?
Tony shrugged, with a smile, then for effect, made a show of looking around the room to see if any one of the people bustling in and out of the mess, from Pickett's secretary to the upset functionary currently pressing her for information she likely did not have, to the cadet sitting in a chair in the corner, who had, no doubt, been forgotten in all of this, paid them any mind. When it was clear they did not, he leaned towards Pickett's desk, stretched out his hand to take a pen from where it rested between one ledger and another, and then stopped, struck by a sight that inspired him to lean in even further. It was the title of the ledger on the left that first attracted him, big, bold, blocky black letters across the top, in what must have been Pickett's handwriting that said, Base Water Levels, September, 2024. Beneath were the customary spreadsheet of the bookkeeper, with columns designating the days, and the rows designating the areas and the cells where they met designating the levels, and clarifying that everything was as it should be. Even Tony could tell at a glance that the numbers seemed copacetic. Anybody giving it even a devoted reading would have seen nothing save some sloppy penmanship out of the ordinary. What gave Tony pause, and had earned his curiosity and suspicion, was that the ledger on the right also bore the same title as the first, and, upon closer examination, an entirely different set of numbers that suggested an Air Force base that was wildly low on water. What this might indicate, Tony could not explain right here, right now. He would need time to ferret out all the implications. All he knew was that it indicated something very, very wrong was at work. That while Marshall's death might have been an accident, it was, in fact, not some unfortunate act of God, but the ultimate outcome of very concrete, very short-sighted, and selfish decisions. Tony nudged Kaz in the ribs with his elbow, while lifting his arm just high enough that Kaz might see it and see his signal to remain calm, without betraying to the rest of the room that something was up. Stealthily, deliberately, his hands completely steady, Tony scooped both ledgers up in his hand and then tucked them under his coat, right up against his left armpit, where he pinned them between arm and torso. With his free arm, he gestured again for Kaz to follow suit and began to make his way out of the room. Kaz followed as silently as he could, clearly straining to usher a control over his crutch that he was not used to demonstrating, and a desire to blurt questions that he was similarly unused to. He managed, though, and within seconds, they had crossed the threshold, Pickett's secretary too occupied to call after them, and none of the other people in the room, or milling around outside of it, any the wiser to what they had done. When they had walked a good deal into the hallway, Kaz opened his mouth and said, "What the fuck is..." only to hold his tongue when Tony turned to him with a look of uncharacteristically grim determination that suggested this was still neither the appropriate time nor place for them to discuss the finer points of what it was he'd seen. They had passed through the buzz of the hall and the gloom of the lobby without incident and were very nearly out of the front door when Pickett himself came bustling in, still every bit as shaken as he'd seemed when he'd excused himself for his meeting with Orlando. In fact, as near as Tony could tell, he looked even worse, much redder and more strained, and breathing harder than he had been behind his desk.
"Leaving so soon, Captain? And you'd only just gotten here,"
he wheezed, his eyes not on Tony nor on Kaz, but looking as if they wanted to spin back in his head and look back outside through the door he'd just come in from. He seemed cagey, scared in ways that told Tony to go on guard, too, made him clench that much tighter the hold he had on the ledgers.
"My apologies, Colonel. Turns out there's been a bit of an emergency relating to our project in Kandahar, and I'm needed on a call."
"What, so pressing that they're asking you to bring the sergeant along with you?"
Tony grimaced involuntarily at that, not having expected to be taken off guard for such an elementary mistake, when Kaz cut in for him.
"It's more use than I can be around here. Besides, I was hoping that maybe I could chime in, prove my worth, get some recognition over there, and end up with a cushy assignment sitting on my ass in the desert like my friend here."
Tony smiled at that, as did Pickett, though the grin on the latter's face suggested a strain of nerves and frustration growing from a less than pleasant encounter with Orlando. Though he couldn't point to how these two elements might be connected already, Tony could sense that there was something linking the documents he now held to Orlando's shadowy presence on the base. For a moment, he regretted taking the documents, since it meant that any further adventures on the base would risk drawing Pickett's ire, but he dearly wished he had a chance to interview members of the community to see if they might know any better.
"Well, Sergeant, I have to think you'll be missed around here if you do leave. But if you'll excuse me, gentlemen, there are some fires around here that desperately need putting out. No pun intended," he said, with a shamefaced grimace that Tony read as less an apology and more as involuntary embarrassment before he bulldozed past them.
"Real fucking funny guy," Kaz growled. "A true people person. Jesus, what do you think's got up his ass? If he was so damn jolly just an hour after a funeral, he's personally responsible for. For that matter, what's gotten into you, Tony? And I'm not talking about in front of the grave, I get it. We're all grieving. But you've been acting weird ever since you asked me about stealing a pen. You that afraid of Pickett finding out you stole some 30-cent piece of shit he bought from Walgreens? Or is this some Manchurian candidate bit? Did I accidentally say the magic words and now you're on a warpath?"
"No, but..." Tony looked over his shoulder at the rapidly retreating form of Pickett and wondered how much time he might have. "It's not anything I feel comfortable talking about here. I don't even know if we have time. Let's go. Now." Kaz looked at Tony with an expression that suggested he felt he was being jerked around, that he was in no mood for pranks, but must have realized who it was talking to him, and so ended up just nodding his head in resigned agreement.
"Lead the way, partner,"